The all-new Toyota RAV4 asks, what if? What if your ride was refined and rugged at the same time? Introducing a car that's got style and substance to spare. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Featuring a sophisticated, muscular new exterior and available options like a premium JBL audio system and panoramic roof. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Toyota. Let's go places. JBL and Clarifier registered trademarks of Harman International Industries Incorporated.
The big wireless companies sold you an outdated plan tied to long-term contracts and mystery fees. Simple Mobile's different. You get a lightning-fast 4G LTE nationwide network with no contract, ever. And keep the phone and number you love. Just text the word BYOP to 611611 to see if your phone is compatible. Simple Mobile. Out with the old, in with the simple.
Standard text, message, and data rates may apply based on your mobile phone service. Please refer always to the privacy policy at simplemobile.com/privacy policy and the terms and conditions at simplemobile.com/terms and conditions.
Welcome to the Church of Mavis radio show. It's Friday night. I got a desktop thing that says, some believe it is only great power that can hold evil in check, but that is not what I have found. It is the small everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keep the darkness at bay. Small acts of kindness and love. Why, Bilbo Baggins? Perhaps because I am afraid and he gives me courage. That's from Gandalf the Wizard from The Hobbit. You're listening to United Public Radio 107.7 FM New Orleans. We got Jay here with us tonight. And our guest is William Pullen. We're waiting for him to get back from a game that he's at for a family member, and he'll be about 7:40 or so. So you can support Before It's News by trying Apex, far superior to Coil or Silver or any of the great products at mitocopper.com. That's mitocopper.com, mitocopper.com. And you can use coupon code Jeff777 for 10% off. There's all kinds of health nutrient stuff there if you want to check it out. That's mitocopper.com. All right, everybody, let's see. I survived Valentine's Day. Gosh, I used to sit around on Valentine's Day every time just totally by myself. I'm sure Jay relates. And this year I had a date, so that was actually good. So that was different. It was good. I'm not going to go into personal details, but it was good. And I had a good time. That's all that matters. But this year, I wasn't home alone with a bottle of booze. I don't even drink that much, but I remember some Valentines that happening for sure, just like watching horror movies and booze back in the younger days. But good to have a date on Valentine's. It peps you up, gets your soul sparkling. You make me a better man. That's right. Jack Nicholson here. Sparks the soul. So, well, Jay, you know, did you spend Valentine's by yourself, or what did you have going on? Work?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, just working.
Yeah. Well, Valentine's, I could see how it can be depressing for people. I mean, I've been there, so, you know, hopefully I don't ever go back there, but I've been there. But nonetheless, I mean, I could see I've had it as a depressive holiday. It is kind of depressing if you're single. It's like, ugh. Terrible, you know, as far as it's definitely good to have a date on Valentine's Day if you can, no doubt. It's a miracle in itself for me. So there you go, miracles. But nonetheless, William Pullen's guest is the guest tonight. He's a UFO historian. I want to move away from Valentine's Day. I don't want to depress single people. As far as everything else, William Pullen, UFO historian, is also a fan of Judas Priest, I've been told. So I'm going to be talking about some music. I remember the newest Judas Priest that came out, and there's a song on there called The Necromancer. The Necromancer.
Yeah.
I got to listen to that. You've heard it, The Necromancer?
I think it's a cover of Rush's Necromancer, which is basically the story of the Lord of the Rings.
Awesome. Well, I need to listen to it. It's like, Necromancer! You've heard it, though? It's pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty good stuff.
If it's the same one I'm thinking of, I've heard the Rush version. I'm not sure I've heard the Pantera version, but
it's probably
I've heard a couple of covers.
I mean, you may be right. It's the remake of it. I don't know. I mean, I guess you're right. But I know Tool's finally coming out with a new album. Finally. They're like, it's maybe out in April. I mean, it's been forever since a Tool album. The last Tool album was, no, it wasn't Anima. It was the other one. Like, I forget what it was called, but I know it's the one with, I know the pieces fit. Something, but 10,000 Days, I believe it was called. But they haven't had an album like 20 years, or I don't even know, so long. They were caught up in some weird lawsuit. And he did Pussifier, that band that he does with Mila Jovovich. And then he also did Perfect Circle, where, you know, he did two other bands, I guess, because of the lawsuit, or just he has that kind of energy. And he did the wine, the vineyards and all that stuff. Some documentary I saw with Maynard on it, and he was hanging out with Mila Jovovich at their wine kind of situation. But definitely the ill-famous legendary Tool album coming this year. We're going to have one of those in centuries, no doubt about it. So that's good. I'm hearing a little beep noise. Is that from my computer? Oh, goodness. Yep. Let me see if that... Okay, that's just a guest. All righty. Let me close that so it quits making beeps. So what kind of music you been listening to, Jay? We're just trying to kill some time to get to him. He's going to message me when he's home, so...
Lately, it's some really weird 60s stuff, like the Crazy World of Arthur Brown. Do you know him? He did that song Fire.
Fire? No, I don't know it, but it sounds good.
Oh, and it's way progressive psychedelic. It's in his goofy. He looks kind of like Jesus, the singer does.
Jay's having like a disco era or something going on.
It's definitely not disco. It's not disco. It's 60s prog rock at best.
send me some of it if you can, and I will find some. But what I've been listening to, okay, like Ministry had a new album called America KKK or something. Like it was America spelled with three Ks, and it just total attack our political system. It was really good. Another good one I've been listening, I can't say the word on air, but Mind Effer by Monster Magnet. Monster Magnet, that's really good. I love Monster Magnet. Have you ever listened to Monster Magnet? He's got a great voice. He did that song, Space Lord, Mother Trucker, Space Lord. You know what I'm talking about. I don't get my bath, I take it out on the slaves. Space Lord, Mother Trucker. Except he says, oh, I know.
Smooth. I don't know. The bass doesn't ring a bell.
It's stoner rock, doom metal. But there's something else. Oh, I just saw the show today. Okay, there's that DC streaming network, which is, it's got Titans on it, which was actually pretty good with Robin and Batman and stuff's in it. But Robin's actually like a psychopath in it, and he's gone crazy.
Yeah.
And there's other DC characters whose names I forget, some hot goth chick, and then some Asian guy that turns into a tiger. That's really cool. But anyway, there's a weird family in it called the Doom Patrol, and Doom Patrol is based on a comic book, and they showed them in Titans, but now Doom Patrol has its own show, and get this, Brendan Fraser is this brain that lives inside a robot superhero's body, and there's also some guy that was like burned to death and has like the Invisible Man. There's a woman that's beautiful, but she turns into like the Blob from that movie, The Blob, you know, back in the day, Steve McQueen. And then the other one with, I think, Matt Dillon and stuff, she can turn into that. And then there's some hot chick that's in, I forget her name, but she's in Orange is the New Black. She's in it. She's like this little alternative mean girl that has different personalities, but it was really good. Lots of Doors music, but I haven't seen Brendan Fraser in a long time. I was surprised that he was in it, but it was really good. I liked it. I saw the first episode today, so it's worth checking out. But here's the thing that's really good too. On that same network, that James Wan guy who's done The Conjuring and stuff, he's making a whole Swamp Thing show. So that's going to be good. I'm excited.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You ever see those old cheesy Wes Craven Swamp Thing movies that he made. You know, the guy that made Freddy and Nightmare on Elm Street. He did a Swamp Thing movie, like. And then there's like an old TV series. They're cheesy as crap. I think this is going to be a lot darker.
First one had Louis Jordan in it. I remember.
Yeah, those old ones are something else. Those are definitely some classics. But I'm really looking forward to Swamp Thing. I mean, that's hot chicks and swamp creatures and mutants, and it's kind of like a Reanimator kind of stuff. Like, he's a weird scientist and stuff. So that's going to be definitely good. And I'm curious to the special effects and all that as well. So that'll definitely be a good one to keep an eye out.
A little better.
Yep.
The technology's improved. I hope better.
Oh, some other news. They're making a Breaking Bad movie. You know, the show. Did you ever see the show? Did you see the show Breaking Bad?
I know of it, but I never did see it. No.
You got to see that one day. That's just like. That's like you got to see The Sopranos. You see The Sopranos?
I have seen some of The Sopranos, yes.
So I would say Breaking Bad's like that level of entertainment. It's good. But anyway, and they did that spinoff series with Bob Odenkirk as Saul Goodman, Better Call Saul. That's really good. But the thing is, I'm not going to give too much about Breaking Bad, but Jesse Pinkman is in the movie, and I guess it's going to be the finishing of his story, because I guess they never really finished it. So looking forward to that for sure. But Better Call Saul is really good too. I love Bob Odenkirk. He is hilarious. But he was, what was that show on HBO? I know he did Bob and Dave on Netflix with David Cross, but there was some other show he did. I have it, but I can't remember. But he does like a lot of sketch comedy. But he's Saul Goodman on Breaking Bad. But of course, Bryan Cranston was Walter White and all that stuff. And that's one you got to see. That's amazing. Some good stuff. But keep an eye out for the guest. So what's been on your teletube?
Well, a couple of days, maybe a week or two ago, I saw the, I don't know which year, 2018, 16, 17 Godzilla movie with Bryan Cranston in it. And it was pretty good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that they're doing a sequel to that real soon.
Have you seen that one yet?
Yeah, I saw it. I need to watch it again. Yes. It's been a while.
It was on TV not too long ago, and I saw it on a couple of, you know, two or three run-throughs.
I definitely check that out again for sure. I know they're doing the next one, which is going to have like all that, all the monsters in it, just about that big dragon. What's that called? Gamora or something?
King Ghidorah is the three-headed flying monster. There's also Rodan is a flying monster. Let's see, Mothra is in it. And I think the Ankylosaurus is in it. What is his name? There's another, the one that has the mace tail. He's in it as well. And maybe one other, maybe the lobster.
It's going to be a Godzilla, Lollapalooza Godzilla, baby. That's right. Lollapalooza Godzilla.
I think it's subtitled The King of the Monsters, too, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, also, there was something else I was just thinking about, and it lost my mind. Oh, there was some new comic they're doing where it's like Savage Avengers, and it's like Conan, the Punisher, Wolverine, and some other. They're all like on the Avengers team now, like a new comic where Conan is like in the modern world, I guess, or something.
Conan the Barbarian, blonde-haired guy from the dinosaur area.
The dinosaur area?
Flash Gordon? There's another guy with K. Yeah, there's a guy with a K. He's K-O-N and then hyphen A-N, Conan. And he's like, God, I can't remember. That. He comes from a hidden area in Africa that's where there's still dinosaurs.
Like Turok or something like that game.
Yes. Yes. Exactly, but, where Turok is. There's a called Turok.
They're supposed to be making a Conan the Barbarian TV show on Amazon. I know I've said that before, but I wish they'd release more on it. And then Arnold was just quoted saying he wants to play a movie where he's old man Conan. And he wants to do it like Unforgiven, you know, where he has to come out of retirement or something and be Conan. Or I think what they were going to do is they were going to like have Conan. He's like the king for so long. And then suddenly his administration becomes. Creators of Command and Conquer, you know, those kind of games, you know, Command and Conquer. Do you remember those kind of games, Jay?
Sort of. It's like you have to build certain buildings to make certain troops and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Like you build your resources and your tanks and all that stuff and, you know, different buildings and stuff. But the guys that did Command and Conquer, they're remastering Command and Conquer, but they're also making a Conan game like that where you're Conan and you're running your city and you know you're getting raided and stuff and you got to have your supplies and troops and monsters, and that's worth getting a I hope it comes to consoles. Cool. Yeah, I hope it comes to consoles too, so that those are real-time strategy games, which hard to come by on consoles. Let me check here and see if my guest gets
to an automatic voice message.
He's not home yet.
0607254 is not available.
Have you been watching?
Please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hold on, I got two messages here. Goodness. Oh, his last message says, "Message you the second I am home." So, as soon as he messaged me, I will say it. So he should be home very soon. His last message to me was, "Message you the second I am home." But Conan the Barbarian. I want to see Arnold back as Conan the Barbarian. I need to read some Conan. I have all those books. They're by Robert Howard. There's a good movie called The Whole Wide World, and it's got Renee Zellweger and Vincent D'Onofrio in it, and it's the story of Robert Howard, who wrote Conan, if you ever get a chance. That's really good. I need to watch that again. But unfortunately, the guy that played Conan, the author, shot himself in the face. So that's pretty misfortunate.
Oh. On purpose?
Yep, he killed himself.
Oh. Well, that's not good.
No, that's never very good, but he did. Then the movie's about it and everything. We've talked about Conan on the show with Skellos Press and stuff before. So definitely. Well, what happened is, I guess he, Robert Howard was dating this woman that was a school teacher, that was Renee Zellweger. And I guess he just wasn't like used to dating like or something. Like, I mean, I think it's like the first time he ever dated anyone and he went nuts or something. Not funny, but still, that's the story. It's in that movie. Not funny.
Yeah, sometimes dating can make me crazy, you know.
I'm sure it can. I think it was like his first experience or something. I think he may have already had some trouble. I don't know. We'd have to get the specialist on, but the movie's sad, but it's real good. All right, let's do it. Okay. Well, we'll be calling him shortly. Jay is going to tell us a story.
Oh, man, I'm not even ready for a story. He didn't tell me I had to tell a story.
Okay. Are you there, William? Is that you?
I'm good. I just got home.
It's going pretty good. We talked about Conan the Barbarian a lot.
Outrageous.
We mentioned that you like Judas Priest, so that's true. You love Judas Priest.
Love the priest.
Hey, Jeffrey, the guest should be in a queue with you, boss.
He's here. He's here. I hear him. I hear
good
him.
Good man.
I got him. All right. Well, William Pullen's here, UFO historian. I guess, William, give us a little bit of background about yourself to start off.
Born and raised in San Antonio, Texas. Born before the 80s. We'll go with that. Before the 70s, actually. Graduated from University of Texas, San Antonio, back in the mid-90s. Started looking at the UFO issue in the late 80s. And was kind of a hardened skeptic. Really wasn't. I really wasn't aware of the extent of the UFO literature, but as time has gone on and the decades have passed, I've become much more aware of what's transpiring, what hasn't transpired, and haven't arrived at any answers. But I guess none of us have really. But always been fascinated with the unknown like that. So, and nowadays, I mean, I'm working as a tennis coach part-time, but on my free time, I'm just pretty much doing research on the UFO issue and appearing on broadcasts like this, and that's about it. So,
what are some things that got you into UFOs? Was it an interest? Was it an experience? I know you've been asked this a million times, but what was it, the catharsis? Was it just like a lifelong interest?
Lifelong interest. I've never experienced anything in my life. I've never experienced anything anomalous. So I come from a point of view where all I have is the data. I'm always fascinated by individuals that have had experiences, whether claimed to have an abduction experience or just a daylight disc sighting or lights at night. I'm always fascinated by how they react, how it changes their lives or doesn't. And the data itself, there's a lot of commonalities between sightings, and there's a lot of variations too. But for myself, I have no firsthand perspective on it. So I kind of come from a clean slate type of point of view from it. But I've been fascinated my whole life about it. I love science, and the possibilities are there. And what's being reported is very fascinating. So I've gone from that. So
definitely. Well, my interest was, I didn't know much about it at all. And my amount of knowledge on the subject was like E.T. and, you know, movies and stuff. But then I had experiences, so that's why I do the show, because I saw a lot of weird stuff over the years with multiple witnesses, and it made me, you know, start interviewing people about it to figure out what the heck was going on. And mine was a catharsis after being healed from testicular cancer and chemo and my dad's death, and I just kind of like attracted a lot of experiences. And I still see some weird stuff, but nothing like I used to a point to where it seemed like, not here, but in Georgia where I lived, like they were drawn to where I lived, and people thought they were there because of me. So that's a thing that I've dealt with. I'm not sure exactly. There's so many different ranges of what UFOs can be now, from, you know, possible extraterrestrial to a drone to, I've even talked to shamans about light being experiences, and they say the dead can travel in spear form. So I wonder if some UFOs are like dead spear people or something weird like that.
It's a wide range. Yeah, it really is. My angle is I take more of a nuts and bolts grounded approach. I proclaim wholeheartedly that I have none of the answers. I have no idea what's going on. But I firmly believe there's not one answer. It's a very diverse phenomenon. So you have people that have different takes and opinions about it. And we may all be right on some level to a greater or lesser degree, or we may all be wrong about it. But the journey to try to solve it is fascinating for me. So, and it's interesting hearing about your side. You have firsthand experience with this. So that's always very fascinating to me.
Definitely. And I guess the thing that you always deal with when you have these kinds of experiences are, why do you have them? And I still haven't really figured that out. I think part of it's connected to the show and raising awareness. I think there are positive ones, but I definitely don't think they're all positive. But I think there are some that are, and it's about raising consciousness, because I have a lot of people on about shamanism. And man, there's nothing like sitting down with, you know, a medicine man from a tribe and asking about the star people. So, I mean, I've had that so many times. I love that. I love what we're doing right now with you. But have you ever come across any natives and stuff like that in your studies, like that kind of knowledge about it?
I interviewed a couple of the individuals that I took their sighting reports, and they were both Native American individuals living in West Texas, and they sighted some anomalous lights in the sky, and they couldn't explain them. So they gave me their sighting reports, and their take was that they felt there was some connection with some of their spiritual beliefs, and that was the theory they put forth to explain it. But they didn't have an answer. That's what they felt. It might have been a possibility. And I, of course, didn't advocate my own take on it because I don't know what they saw. I just took the sighting report. That was it. But it was interesting how the society they're raised in, the way they're raised, their perspective, whether it's cultural or religious or what, or ideological or whatever the case may be, can certainly affect how an individual interprets an unknown sighting. And of course those two individuals were raised completely different than I was in a different way. So their take would be different than my take on it. So it's fascinating how, what's reported is very diverse, but it's almost as diverse as the individuals reporting those things. And that certainly is an issue that isn't, it may not be addressed as much as it should be. So.
Yeah, definitely. I've had Artie Six Killer Clark on. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she has Native American books where she went around to different tribes, people, and took down all their encounters. Her name's Artie Clark, and the book, it's like Native American, UFO encounters or something. And then she has a book, yes. Sky People, where she went down to South America. But have you ever read any of her stuff at all? That I would highly recommend that if you've never.
I have two of her volumes in my collection.
That's good, isn't it?
I found them interesting. I don't have a perspective on them, but I found them interesting. In my collection, I take great pains to read books and papers and manuscripts from all different points of view. Whether or not I agree with them or not, that's not the issue. The issue is I want to get different people's takes, how they interpret this phenomenon, and add that to my knowledge. Even if I don't agree with that take or I don't have a perspective on it, it still reaps benefits to be aware of what other individuals and other researchers who have different lifestyles, who have been raised a different way in a different society, and we're all humans, but how that different lifestyle affects how they interpret these things, and they're privy to information and belief systems that you and I may not be. So that certainly is another perspective which needs to be taken into consideration. So, I have two of her volumes in my collection. I can't recall when I read them. It's been a while since I read them, though, so.
Awesome. Yeah, I gave her UFO Woman of the Year award. That's how much I love her stuff. But do you collect all this stuff? Are you ever going to do books or anything? Or what's some projects that you plan to do? Do you ever plan to write a book or anything?
You know, I was encouraged to write a book by another young woman. I appeared on her podcast last year. And I wouldn't have the time other than the summertime. But I've never really felt the motivation to write one. Mainly because I think I would be defeated by the time constraints with my coaching work and other things. So I guess I could make an attempt at some point to write one, but I'm such a nuts and bolts data guy. I'd probably end up writing just a compilation of data of sightings that have been reported in a certain geographical area. It probably wouldn't be a very enjoyable book to read. And yeah. I'm being honest, it probably wouldn't be. Probably just a bunch of data and sighting reports and not much else, which wouldn't really add much to the, I guess it would add to the UFO literature, but it's a lot of sighting cases are already out there. So another summary of them just adds to another volume, but it doesn't really, get us moving further forward per se. So I guess I could write one someday, but we'll see.
Well, I've wrote some in the past, and it's been like 2 or 3 years, or I don't know, like it's been a while since I've done another one. I started a few, and then the Hurricane Michael and stuff happened and I had to move, so it all got messed up. So now I'm supposed to be like starting again, but it really is a pain in the ass to do it. It really is. It's like there's just constant resistance. It's like there's a force that's trying to stop you from writing for some reason. That's always there.
It's certainly a ton of work. I mean, I appreciate whether I agree with the take of a certain book or not. I've always appreciated the amount of work that it takes to get into to put a book together. I can only imagine, having never done one myself, the voluminous amount of work it takes to chase footnotes, to gather information, to vet information, to organize it in a way that's readable and acceptable to the layperson or to someone who's more knowledgeable about UFOs. I cannot imagine the amount of work. So that's probably the biggest hurdle for me. I don't want to. I work enough as it is,
yeah,
with research and just. I can't imagine trying to write a book. yeah, that would be pretty problematic for me. So
that's me too. With the job I already have, I'm always doing stuff on the keyboard, and I gotta like incorporate a book into that too. So it's like I already am on a computer 24/7 doing my job. So it's like I gotta be on there even longer than that. That's part of it. But. Yeah. The thing I wanted to ask you about, the thing that's so interesting about our society, is a lot of people laugh about, you know, the alien subject on the news and stuff like that. And then right now, you know, we had the whole Pentagon admittance of the UFO program, and they released all that video whenever it was, a year or so ago. And I know it was some related to that Tom DeLonge stuff and all that stuff somehow. And they, you know, had those pilots looking at that craft, and they're like, oh my God, there's a legion of them or something like that. But the thing is, in our society, it's like when they admitted all that, it was like they kind of, you know, had a disclosure. And I hate that word, you know, disclosure, it drives me nuts. But the thing
is,
but the thing is, and then we have on History Channel them telling the story of Alan Hynek and that Project Blue Book, which it's okay, but there's some of it like I cringe at. And I know Nick Redfern has torn it apart to pieces, but it's fun to watch, and Littlefinger from Game of Thrones is in it. But that whole thing is basically supposedly the true but glamorized story of Alan Hynek and our first UFO program. So everyone's laughing, but it's already, the proof's right in everyone's face. And I guess most people don't even notice.
I guess that's a long-winded statement. I guess the statement the Pentagon released, I'm a very cautious individual. So what I took from that release was that for a certain amount of time, the UFO subject was actually treated respectively by the local media, by the national media. It was looked at in a more respectable, legitimate way, as opposed to the way the UFO issue is usually treated by the media. So that was a big change. And then we move forward to this, the new show Project Blue Book on History Channel. Not that I'm trying to plug it. The foreword says it's based on real events. Although that's not the exact wordage, but again, they've Hollywooded up. They add things to the script, to the screenplay. They put snippets of information that is relatively accurate, but that's not the majority of the story. And it's kind of like X-Files meets Mad Men. So if an individual is just interested in the UFO phenomenon and is okay with UFOtainment, I guess that's okay. That's a good show to watch. I mean, it's entertaining for what it is. But if someone wants to get accurate information as to what actually transpired when Hynek was part of Blue Book, that is not the show to watch. In any way, shape, or form. But it's all what a person wants, I guess, is the bottom line.
I would look at it as like a good intro, beginning level. Maybe it'll draw people into it more. I mean, that's good at least. But I know there's some book about Alan Hynek. I have it, UFO Man or something.
The Close Encounters Man.
Yeah. Who's that by?
Yeah, by it. That's Mark O'Connell. I'm giving him a plug. It's an excellent book. So it's in my collection. The Close Encounters.
I have it. I need to read it.
Yeah. You do. It's, yeah.
That's the best place to go for Alan Hynek, I'm sure. That's what I think for sure, definitely. Well, I guess we'd like to kind of go back and forth with me and Jay. And I'm going to Jay's here, Jay McNicholas, a co-host. So he's going to get some questions in, and then I'll still be here just getting a breather. Go ahead, Jay.
So, hey, as a historian, how far back do you go with the UFO history?
My personal take is that the modern history of the UFO phenomenon kind of started around the Foo Fighters era, World War II.
Right.
Going further back than that, it's very hard to really get concrete evidence of these sightings because you're relying on the quality of journalism back in those days, and that's a slippery slope. That's a crapshoot. So, and then a lack of physical evidence. Witnesses are gone. They passed away. So there's no real angle to attack these sighting reports prior to that. Now, once the Foo Fighters arrived, that's that phenomenon. There was a military involvement there. These things were sighted by military officials and personnel. So then there's a potential for a paper trail. And as you move forward, then there's more witnesses alive. You have the advent of cameras and videos, the collection of physical evidence. You have a lot more avenues to pursue to legitimize the case or debunk a case, as the case may be. So the further back in time you go, the more troublesome it is to even try to prove this phenomenon. So I guess that for me, it's kind of World War II and then moving forward from there.
Yeah, I have to agree. And some of the really old stuff, there's some paintings that, you know, to modern day pictures, they look like UFOs, but you know, they could be ambiguous at best. So I guess World War II, the Foo Fighters, is a good starting point going forward. So have you collated since World War II and currently, have you come upon a solid number on how many aliens do visit the planet from, say, the 40s till now?
I have no idea. I posed that as a poll question in my group on Facebook, and the answers ran from 1 to 3 to hundreds. My personal take, I have no idea. So there are claims of many races visiting us, but I don't know how you would go about proving that. There are no bodies recovered that we can examine. The civilians, the public, yeah. If the government has recovered things, there's no motivation to disclose if they have anything. There's no motivation for them to disclose anything, the military or the government. So there's no way to recover any potential things they may have or they may not have. I mean, it's so ambiguous because you have sighting reports, you have abduction sightings, you have abduction reports, and there's descriptions of extraterrestrials that are numerous, and some look similar, but other ones are pretty distinctly different from other ones. But again, those are reports, those are sightings, and without a great amount of physical evidence, without some corroborating evidence to add a second line of evidence to try to prove these things, they're really just stories. It's hard to go past that. If somebody was able to recover a body or a piece of organic material from a creature that is clearly not from Earth, that would go a long way. That would solidify the claim of an extraterrestrial here on Earth. But without those things, it's impossible to prove them. And by definition, it's impossible to know how many, if there are any, visiting Earth. Although I should preface that, or actually at the end of that statement, say, I believe alien visitation has occurred, but I don't think it's as common as most people in the UFO community would say. But I think it has occurred. But how to find out how many races have visited us, if it's even a plural number, I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, there's some interesting surveys that have been done on it, and it goes anywhere from 11 to 4. But like I said, there's no concrete evidence to prove one way or the other those statistics. But there are some historically extremely active UFO cases, particularly the crashes. Have you looked into any of those? And how many have you looked into of the crashes that have occurred, say, from the World War II era forward?
Yeah, I've examined, obviously, there's the elephant in the room, the Roswell case. I've examined that one. Examined the claims of the Aztec case of 48, Kecksburg of 65, excuse me. It was supposedly a crash outside of Las Vegas back in 52, I believe, or 62. I'll probably got the year wrong. So there's, and there's the case of in Cape Girardeau. There's what's the other case I was just talking about the other day on my group, Shag Harbor. There's quite a number of cases that are claimed to have occurred. But again, like the occurrence of alien visitation, I think there have been a couple of crashes at best. I think there are lists out there in the UFO literature that list 300 to 400 UFO crashes, which I personally feel is preposterous, because then we would be having totally different conversations. We would be asking each other what's going on, how many are visiting us. We would be asking questions like, why are they coming? Or that's amazing, that one that crashed in Denver or whatever. Yeah. I'm leery about some crash retrieval cases. I feel a couple of them are hoaxed or illegitimate, but I do feel a couple have occurred, but that's a personal feeling. But again, without a physical piece of the craft, it's hard to, I guess the best way to put it is there are a couple of cases where the majority of the testimony leads you toward the extraterrestrial, but doesn't get you there. Mm-hmm. You can't prove it without a piece of the craft. You can't prove it without a piece of a organic body, a physical body. So some of the stronger cases, the evidence is strongly suggestive of extraterrestrial, but we can't prove it without a physical piece. That doesn't mean it won't be proven in the future, but as of this point in time, that's all we got. That's kind of what we're living with. So. Yeah, and there's other strong cases like Socorro and Remnants of Forest back over in England back in 1980. Those aren't crashes, but those are multiple witness sightings of landings, and those are pretty strong cases of something anomalous happening. Again, that doesn't get us to extraterrestrial, but it's certainly something unexplained. By definition, that's a UFO. So,
Ronnie Zamora cases test of time. The Pentwaters case is to the test of time. They're pretty solid cases. I've looked into both of those pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I personally feel the Socorro case is a little closer to, or it may more likely be extraterrestrial. That's my personal take. Renderson Forest, I'm not sure. Of course, I could be totally wrong about both, but you're right. Very strong cases, especially Renderson with multiple witnesses. And a lot of them are military officials. So they've stood the test of time. They're still unexplained. And that, to me, that's fascinating. It's interesting because the leader of Blue Book at the time, Hector Quintanilla, was given permission to look into the Socorro case. He was given top secret clearance to examine any potential paper trails or evidence to try to assign an explanation for the case, and he couldn't do it. He had to assign the Socorro case an unexplained tag in Blue Book, and that's the last thing the Air Force wanted to do at the time, assign a case unexplained.
Yeah.
Because he knew that the groups that were interested in UFOs, like NICAP and APRO, would have a field day, but he had no choice because he was unable to find any evidence in the Air Force archives or files to explain this with any kind of a terrestrial vein. So, but you're right about those cases. They have stood the test of time, very much so.
Yeah, and I think my history on this subject may be a little off. Maybe you can help on this, but I do believe after Blue Book and Project Grudge Sign or whatever it all morphed in and out of, at the end, I think they had 12% of their cases were unsolved, or something around that number.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. There was a higher number of ones they didn't assign. They assigned like an ambiguous tag to it, but it was like, I think it was like 12% that was unexplained, something to that effect. You're right. Yeah. It was a relatively low amount. Yeah.
But it's that small amount is enough to say, hey, you know, this subject requires more study, and yet they killed the project anyway.
Yeah, that was their motivation. Now, the Condon report was all about giving them an out to close down Blue Book. It did actually, I didn't need to rephrase that, to close down the public investigation. Those of us that are kind of in the UFO community that have some level of critical thinking, all except the fact that UFO investigations conducted by the Air Force did not end at Project Blue Book, but the public investigations ended. It was simply buried and was unavailable for the public viewing. So the idea, and that was going back to that story about the Pentagon investigating UFOs. I was speaking to a couple of individuals that are friends of mine. They were part of the community, and they were surprised that the government was admitting to investigating UFOs at all. They thought that they accepted the fact that they had stopped investigating after Blue Book was closed. And I said, no, that's probably not the case at all. I think it's unreasonable to assume. It's unreasonable to assume that they did stop. They simply stopped the public investigation of UFOs and continued on in a private, top secret manner that wasn't available to the civilian population. Hynek was part of that. Yeah, you're right. It went from signed to grudge to Blue Book, and what it's called now, who knows? But they're still being investigated.
It's changed and morphed over the years. But the thing that gets me about the whole project altogether, and historically, we're talking in the 50s, we're right out of World War II, people are scared to death of the red threat, the Russians, the nuclear bombs that they're blowing off.
Yeah.
And we have credible UFO cases that come under Blue Book's purview, where UFOs are over military bases. They're taking control of military equipment, namely those nuclear missiles and weapons, and then flying away. And then they say there's no credible threat to the country or the planet. Yeah. I'm sorry, but you just described like two of them right there.
you're right.
In all ways, shapes, and forms. You know, if they're able to take control of our most, you know, delicate, top secret nuclear devices, well, of course, that's a threat to the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if those events had not transpired, just the dynamic that there are unidentified aerial phenomena, there are unidentified flying craft, possibly, at least UFOs, flying in our airspace, and the Air Force is unable to clear our skies of them, they're not doing their job. That's their mandate, to protect the skies over the United States, to keep us safe. If there are unidentified flying objects flying in our airspace, and they can't do anything about it, well, that by definition is a national security issue. And then you add to that what you described. That it's a national security issue. And there have been other countries that have claimed that is not the case. But again, the same thing is happening. Military air forces around the country, around the different countries in the world, are not able to clear the skies of these anomalous, whatever they may be. That's a national security issue. You're exactly right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and the main impetus for why they didn't say they weren't a credible threat is because, again, we're just out of World War II, and they didn't want the country to know that, hey, guess what? We're not in control of our skies after a big, huge war with the rest of the planet.
You know, a lot of the things that transpired after World War II, if there were any crash retrievals, if something did crash at Roswell or some other area that we're not aware of, then certainly the Cold War scenario would have been a motivation to cover it up, because we wouldn't have wanted the Soviet Union to be aware of what we recovered because of the potential military applications or the perception of that. That's certainly a motivation. Although I personally don't feel we're smart enough as a species to reverse engineer alien technology, but the perception of that is enough to demand a cover-up, to demand a a blanket camp down on these things so that the Soviets, our main adversary at the time, would be unaware of what we may or may not have ever covered. So certainly the Cold War scenario had a great deal to do with the cover-up of anything we recovered. And it makes you wonder, did the Soviets do the same thing?
Absolutely. I believe they have their own incidents. And it's funny you mentioned the reverse engineering. A great deal that really didn't start until the 60s when we had more, you know, a little bit better technology where we could actually work with some of that, some of their systems. But by Korea, we were using laser sighting systems. We were using night vision systems. By Vietnam, we had it perfected to the point where I think we're at generation 3 night vision in Vietnam. So that's one of the few systems that came out of allegedly and specifically the Roswell crash. And I don't know if you've heard of Philip Corso's book, but he details quite a bit of most of that technology being funneled through the top secret R&D system of the Navy and the Army through the 60s.
Yeah, that book is in my collection. I'm extremely leery about his claims of reverse engineering because there's historically a trail of evidence and historically accurate facts that show that these things like lasers, like I'm drawing a blank. Some of these supposedly reverse engineered systems from alien spacecraft, alien technology. There's a trail there that these things are being developed in the 40s prior to Roswell occurring. Do I think that we got some ideas from potentially reverse, recovered alien technology? I think that's more feasible. I think if we recovered a craft, the way it's constructed, maybe not the materials, but the way it's built, the way it's aerodynamic, maybe that gave us some ideas and turned on a few light bulbs in our head, and that may have led to some technology. I just don't think we're advanced enough to reverse engineer it. It'd be like taking a VHS tape or a CD back to the 1700s and asking them to decipher it. They wouldn't have the technological know-how to do it. It wouldn't mean that they couldn't do it, but they needed to advance their own technology so they could actually apply it to something more advanced. But I might be wrong, but my gut tells me that we're not smart enough to do it yet. But we're smart enough to get some ideas from it, because certainly a lot of our stealth aircraft. There's a point in time in the 50s and 60s where our stealth aircraft started looking different. Substantially different from what came before. I mean, you had the U-2 spy plane, but by the time we get to the SR-71, the F-117, there's a substantial change from the U-2 to those aircraft. And it makes you wonder, you know.
F-117. And that's where they start the weird angles and the strange shapes on the ships, all the different triangles and facets to the skin of the ship. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the idea that it needs to be hidden from radar. And could we have arrived at those things on our own? Sure, we could have. But if we recovered anything alien in the intervening years, could we have gotten some ideas from that technology and incorporated it into our own aircraft? That's also a possibility too. For me, that's the extent of our reverse engineering, I think, as of this point. But our technology is improving all the time. So if we did recover anything alien, at some point in the future, as decades go on, I think we will be able to reverse engineer it because our own know-how, our own technological know-how would have increased to the point where we can actually interpret it and find out what makes it tick and go from there. It's an interesting conversation. I mean, it's fascinating to think of the possibilities.
Hey guys, there's one thing I want to bring up. I know they just released some report about space wars, and the U.S. released it and said basically the future is going to be fought in space, and they did this big thing. But my question is, I wonder you know, what's already there as far as secret space. I mean, they could be already fighting wars and we just don't even know what's going on up there. But I know there's a lot of satellite stuff and, you know, Russia and China, God knows what they're trying to do up there. So that's like the new frontier. But everything's going to be okay because we have the Space Force now. So just sit back and relax. But it's creepy to think about the secret space and all that. And also those pyramid craft, I've seen those many times. I've seen those pyramid craft back in the 96 through 99 with my mother and witnesses. I've seen those pyramid craft come out of a hole in the sky as if they were, I don't know what they were doing, but it was like they came out of an open area in the sky that was kind of orangish green in a pyramid craft. I watched them come out of it. I don't know if they were just coming out of stealth or what, if it was a freaking Stargate. I don't know what it was, but it looked like a Stargate or something to me. But I've seen those craft. Also, one time I was with a buddy of mine in in Georgia, and some of those pyramid craft were parked over some power lines, and we saw a golden ball of light come out of it and come down. And I've seen a lot of UFO stuff where I've seen it over me at treetop level and stuff, but I don't remember ever being taken by aliens or anything like that. If I was, I don't remember a thing. They mind wipe the crap out of me because I don't remember anything like that. But I have seen UFOs so many times, you wonder if that's happening to you because you see them at that, you know, that level at the sky, and it kind of seems like they know you see them. I've had a lot of experiences like that. I've had Christo Ruppolo on from that movie Curse of the Man That Sees UFOs. Did you ever get to see that?
I've heard of it. I haven't watched it though. No.
You should check it out. I think it'll surprise you. He's like a 65-year-old funny punk rock guy, and he did that movie, and he cusses a lot, but he has some awesome footage intertwined in it that's amazing, from daytime, from nighttime, and it's like he attracts them, and I kind of feel similar to his story because it's kind of similar to mine. But he also agreed that some could be light entities. And I asked him, do you think some of them could be deceased loved ones because he's had loss in his life and stuff? He says, yes, some of them are that. He calls them jellyfish and eggplants. You should watch it. It's really good. I love it. He's doing a sequel. Last time I talked to him, he was on the beach with that Tom DeLonge and for his second movie or something, which I'm not like a big Blink 182 Tom DeLonge. I think that whole thing, you know, I'm sure whatever, it sounds great on the outside, but it seems like he aligned himself with like all these shadow government people, like the smoking man from X-Files. Like, here's UFOs, but I work with the smoking man from X-Files. Here you go. So
yeah,
that whole, you know, to the stars situation and everything with all that stuff. But as far as what do you think about that organization? Have you looked into it much? What's your view on that?
I'm cautious. I don't buy it yet. I don't. I'm a very skeptical person. Not a debunker, but I want time. I want information. It seems like what's happening is they're certainly controlling the situation as far as how quickly or how slowly information is released. They're controlling the narrative, which is troubling. I've heard DeLonge make statements like, well, I'm not ready to talk about that, or I can't talk about that, or as if they're controlling the narrative. That's what happens in communist countries when you control the narrative. You're picking and choosing, or someone is picking and choosing, or deciding what information you can have. It sounds like a government. They pick and choose what is releasable to the public, and the rest is classified. To me, that's very troubling. I'm a big advocate of no secrecy. Open it up. Tell everybody. Everybody wants to know. Everyone wants to know what's going on, and everyone would like to know what's not going on. So that way, these claims can be looked at legitimately and say, okay, that's legitimate. That isn't. This guy's a debunker. This guy's lying. He's hoaxing. This guy's legitimate. This case holds up under scrutiny. That all comes from freedom of information. If everybody's UFO files were open, I mean wide open, and I won't use the D word, but if that was the case, we would know a lot more about what's going on, at least on an earthly level. So the DTSA seems to be controlling the narrative, which is what the government's been doing for decades. So it's the same thing. I'm very cautious. I wait. I heard lots of statements last year, like 2018 will be the year. 2018 will be the year of the UFO, or 2018 will be the year of disclosure. I've heard those things for the last 20 years, and nothing has transpired. It's the same rhetoric every year. So I'm very cautious. You know, going back to the sighting thing, you mentioned how some things look like they're coming out of a wormhole and they're colored. And to me, I find that fascinating as a nuts and bolts guy, because I would love to know how they get here, regardless of whether they're extraterrestrial or multidimensional or whatever the explanation is, if there's one single one or multiple ones. I think it's fascinating to wonder and try to find out how they get here, how they defeat the distances from wherever they're coming from, whether they're coming from another dimension or far away in a physical realm in our own universe or whatever the case may be. That's a fascinating aspect, you know, of the UFO phenomenon. How are they getting here? Who are they? Why are they coming here? All these simple questions and that need to be answered. They're not, I mean, they're simple the way they're worded, but the answer may be very complex. So that's a fact that keyed my interest when you mentioned that. That's very interesting. So
definitely. And I'm wondering what it looks like when a vehicle leaves stealth too. I mean, maybe that's what I saw, but I don't think that's what I saw. But I'm curious, have you ever seen like a normal military type vehicle go in and out of stealth? Or, I mean, they do that, right? They like go invisible and then don't, or is it, how's that work exactly? Does it make colors? I mean, I don't know.
It seems like the military stealth aircraft, they are designed to be extremely hard to detect under radar. So I don't think
they don't change or anything when they actually do.
Yeah,
that.
It's not like they flip a switch and then they're invisible. They're simply designed. The skin of the craft doesn't show up on radar. So when they're in the air, they show up. I mean, an aircraft that large shows up like a brick or a bird. So yeah. It looks very mundane. It looks like something natural. So it's a constant thing when it's flying. The form of the craft doesn't change. There's no physical change. Yeah.
I definitely think it was a portal, because if those things don't do anything like that, I mean, it seemed like it was coming out of it, like a hole in the sky is the best way to describe it. One of my weirdest UFO sightings ever, and I will never forget this one. I've had a bunch, but this was in Lynn Haven, Florida, and I was just walking around the block one day in the morning. I might have had a dog with me. I can't remember. I think I did. And I saw this rusty ball float through the air over the street, extremely low, and there was nothing attached to it. It wasn't like a chain and a forklift or, you know, whatever, hauling it. There was nothing. It was floating through the sky. It was just like a rusty, weird ball. Like, it almost looked like something Oscar the Grouch would live in or something. It was weird.
Yeah.
I still don't know maybe there's a logical explanation for it, but I swear there was nothing holding it. There were no chains. It was like it was flying, but it was like a rusty UFO. I'll never forget that one. That is just so weird. And when I tell those stories, like, you relive it on some level, and it's, I'm trying to write about it, but they're always there. They don't go away. When you see something like that, it's always there, and you relive it on some level when you talk about it, at least for me. But that's definitely one of the weirdest ones. Just like a metal ball floating through the sky that's rusty. I mean, why would it be rusty? Unless it came from the ocean? Yeah, because, you know, we're near the ocean, so maybe it was like a USO situation, and I just saw it. I don't know. It was weird. But I know in those R.D. Sixkiller books, she talks about their native families that are the water keepers, and UFOs like come to their houses and they help them refuel with water and stuff. They call them the water keepers. And so there's so many levels to it that, like we said earlier, in perceptions and perspectives and things of that nature. But the point I'm at right now with society and the state we're in and our, you know, our government and the way things are. It's like we're reliving the Cold War fears over times a million right now, or something to that level, with Putin saying he's got tsunami nukes and their state TV saying they're going to, you know, nuke us soon with their new typhoon bomb. We're definitely living in strange times. But one thing I was remembering earlier, I saw on Jesse Ventura, Stephen Greer, and I don't know how you feel about him. I know a lot of people are on the fence and stuff. I've had his friend Steve Alton on, and I don't have any bad opinions about Stephen Greer. I don't know enough about it, but I've heard, you know, a wide perspective of opinions. But they were talking about the president requested UFO materials and was denied access by some part of the government. I guess deep state, I guess. I don't know what exactly it was, but what do you know about? Have you studied into like stories like that or heard anything like where president's trying to request material? But according to him, he said they were denied by whoever was in charge of UFOs, which I don't know how true that was, but that was on like RT Ventura interviewing Stephen Greer. It's on YouTube.
There have been stories that there have been speculations that Kennedy was killed because he was going to reveal the UFO issue. There have been speculations that Nixon was going to reveal some UFO, disclose some stuff about the UFO phenomenon, but then Watergate happened and that fell through. Jimmy Carter was going to initiate a UFO release program and asked NASA, the director of NASA, to look into the UFO phenomenon, and the director of NASA told him no. Clinton looked into it, supposedly. I can't recall offhand who the director of NASA was, but he wrote a letterhead to Carter and told him no, and that went nowhere after that. Do I think the president could find out? I think he could. I think the president can go to his chief of staff and say, tell me all you know about the UFO issue. And if he says, the chief of staff says, well, sorry, sir, we can't tell you that. That's classified. The president should tell him, okay, you're fired. Show me your system. And just fire everybody until he gets to somebody who will follow through. This is the most powerful individual in the world who's public. So if the president went out publicly and stated that he wanted to find out everything there was about UFOs, what are they going to do? Assassinate him?
Yeah.
Because then that the cat will be out of the bag. So
who was the president who was the president there in Hynek and Project Blue Book? I know it says it that on the show. I don't remember who's.
There were several administrations. There was when it started, that was under the Eisenhower administration. That went through Kennedy, through Johnson, through Nixon. That was it. Yeah, through all those four, because it was from early 50s, I think 52, all the way till 1970. So there were four administrations of two of each political party.
Definitely.
During the Blue Book years.
And there was an earlier show in the 70s or 80s on Blue Book that was also on TV on NBC, I believe, before this TV show was on.
That was actually a little more accurate. That was Project UFO. Project UFO. Yeah, you're right. It ran for like 2 years. That was a lot more historically accurate. That was created by, oh God, what was the guy's name? The guy that created Dragnet. I'm drawing a blank.
I'll have to check that out. I'm writing it down.
Yeah, but he was involved in the Project UFO show. That was a good show. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
There's one show that I've interviewed the guy, but it escapes me. I have the set, but the guy that did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Tobe Hooper did it or something. It's a UFO show. I have it.
Yeah.
Dark. I don't remember. I have it. But go ahead, Jay. You got some questions?
I want to get back to Roswell. How deep into Roswell did you get? You said you investigated it. What was your conclusion? What were your findings?
I think the majority of the evidence, the testimony, which is held up under scrutiny, almost all of it has to do with military officials who were serving there at Roswell Army Airfield. All of them except for one individual Sheridan Cabot, who was a CIC officer. He claims it wasn't extraterrestrial. Everybody else does.
Excuse me.
And these are firsthand witnesses, the majority of them. My gut tells me that the majority of the evidence leads you toward extraterrestrial. There's no other explanation. There's no other explanation that really holds water, that really goes where the evidence leads you. But you can't prove it without a piece of the craft. We can't unlock the doors at Wright Patterson Air Force Base or wherever it is now, if they've recovered it, and show the world, okay, here's the craft that was recovered at Roswell. The best we could do is kind of where we're at now. And now that virtually all the witnesses are dead, it's kind of a cold case. There's nowhere else to go with it. Unless we found documentation that was vetted and verified and that had a provenance that we could backtrack the footnotes and find out where this originated. If that surfaced, that would go a long way. But that hasn't happened yet. So my gut tells me it's extraterrestrial, but I'm like maybe 75% ET. I'm not as convinced as other researchers are that it's extraterrestrial, but it's still 75%. That's a pretty high number. So,
it's awesome. But also interesting, you brought up the documentation. There has been some other documents that have come out on the UFO subjects, allegedly military, top secret documents. So, what do you know of the MJ-12 documents and those kind of the secret society documents that talk about the alien situation?
MJ-12, I'm skeptical of MJ-12 because I think there may be some information in there that is legitimate, but there's some glaring weaknesses. It mentions the Eisenhower briefing document. Contained within that document is a reference to a crash. I think it's near El Indio Guerrero on the border of Texas and Mexico. And it's labeled the Del Rio crash. And it's told by one gentleman, Robert Willingham, who claimed to be an Air Force or an Army Air Force, a colonel who is a fire pilot. But his military background doesn't hold up. He only served for 13 months at the tail end of World War II. He was only E3, and E3 is not a bird colonel. So being the only witness to that case, if his testimony and his background doesn't hold up, that case kind of falls apart. And that case is included in the Eisenhower briefing document, which is part of the MJ-12 document. So that to me is a red flag. There's other issues with it. The dating format is wrong on some of the documents. It's not accurate. It's not military standard dating format. And there's no provenance. We can't track those things down to where they came from. What department did they come from? What military department? What branch of the military? What part of the Army Air Force did these things originate from? We can't find out. They disappeared in the early 80s, and they've been researched thoroughly. And many researchers are on different sides of the fence when it comes to these documents. There's always the argument, are they disinformation? Are they totally hoaxed? Are they legitimate? To what extent are they? It's argued about constantly in the UFO community. Not so much now because the decades have gone by, but the bottom line is, my take on it is, do I think a UFO group was formed by the government slash military to investigate UFOs? Yes, I do. I think that's a pretty common sense, grounded take on it. Now, these things were being cited. Of course, the government would assign a military group to investigate what was going on. That makes sense. Was it labeled MJ-12? I'm not sure. And they may have been, but there's enough red flags in those documents to make you think maybe they're not completely legitimate. So I'm not sure. But I think there was a... organization assigned to investigate this, and I think they're still active now. So,
yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that number one, Well, I'm fairly certain that it was called MJ-12, but the documents we have may be false, may be duplicates of actual records at some point, but are done incorrectly. There are a few that haven't been really vetted or unvetted. I don't know if you've heard of it. I think it's called SOCOM 1 or SOCOM 2, and it's a procedural manual on how to what's the best way to put it? How to cover up and collect evidence at a UFO crash.
Yeah, I've heard of that document. I haven't examined them, but I've heard that. I've heard about that scenario, that documentation. That's interesting because, I mean, the military has procedures for everything. I mean, everything the military does, there's a set procedure for it. That's the way the military conducts its ways. That's the way it conducts itself. So,
and a manual for the procedure, yeah.
So that makes sense. If the military at some point did recover something extraterrestrial, then it makes sense they would establish a criteria, a set of rules, so the military would conduct itself in a certain way if that scenario transpired again. If there was another crash or sighting or some opportunity to gather evidence, the military would have established I'm drawing a blank as far as the word for it, but a set of rules to apply to that scenario. That makes total sense. That doesn't make those locked documents legitimate, but the idea behind them makes sense. That's a pretty common sense assumption.
Yeah, they flashed the book on a couple episodes of Ancient Aliens, and it's interesting, but, you know, the problem we have with, like you brought up, is the provenance of it. Where did it come from? What department? Who wrote it? Where was it printed? You know, all of these things need to be found out before we can use it as real evidence.
Yeah, hey, I agree. Yeah.
Hey guys, I got a question in the chat room from Tartu. I haven't seen Tartu in a very long time. It's the return of Tartu. Where you been, man? Let me see. Oh, Dark Skies was the Toby Hooper show that came on. I've interviewed the guy that made that. Jack Webb was the creator of the UFO series. I guess that's that project one. But for some reason, he's asking about Orville. And I guess UFO shows altogether in sci-fi. I've been watching the new Star Trek and Orville. I like them both. I mean, the new Star Trek actually got a lot better this season, and I didn't hate the last season. But Orville, I mean, I enjoy it, but it's got the potty humor side. Some episodes are boring. Some are really good, but it's pretty successful. But it's interesting to see that Star Trek dynamic and things, you know. I'm surprised they get away with it legally, really. I guess you can. I mean, Galaxy Quest, there's been different things, Lost in Space, so everything's not, you know, just because you're in space, it's not, you know, Star Trek. But I just wonder how they skirt around that trademark issue. But have you seen the Orville at all, William? Do you have any opinion on that? That was his question for some reason.
I think I saw the premiere episode. It was clearly a parody parody on some level of Star Trek. It seemed like a parody of Star Trek The Next Generation. The first episode, I found it was funny. I enjoyed the writing. The effects were nice, and there wasn't any potty humor in the premiere episode. But I don't watch any. I really don't watch much sci-fi at all. Not modern sci-fi. So I'm unaware of how the series has gone since then. But from the initial premiere episode, it was pretty cool.
It's pretty good. It's worth watching for sure. I mean, it's compared to the other garbage out there, it's pretty good. I mean, it's different, you know. So anything with aliens, I'm there. There's a good one on TBS. I don't know if you've heard of it, People of Earth, and it's about like alien abductees, and it's actually pretty decent. It's like little 30-minute comedies, and there's an alien that looks like it has a ball sack head, and it's gray and stuff like that, and it's pretty good. There's a Nordics, I guess he's from Sweden, but he's a Norse alien, and he's like hitting on the chicks, but that's People of Earth. I hope they do more of that. It actually surprised me. It was so good. And it was strange to see a show do, you know, there was like alien abductee groups and stuff on it, and it wasn't offensive really. And because, you know, I've been through that kind of stuff, and A lot of people have. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, a lot of people think UFOs and aliens are crazy, but I mean, there's been New York Times best-selling authors on the subject, from Strieber to who's the other one? The lady that did all the Leslie Keene. There's been all kinds of different stuff there, you know. So it's a serious subject. It just depends on when you, where you look. And most people just see funny stuff, you know, making fun of it on TV and stuff. So that, I guess that's all they know. But as far as the way everything is right now, ecologically with the Earth, they say half the world's wildlife population is dead from humans, which I don't know how accurate that is. But I know species are dying off at crazy rates from climate change and all the other stuff going on, from, you know, harvesting their forests and all that stuff, and, you know, the Amazon. But as far as I think the only thing that's going to save us is alien invasion. That's about the only option left at this point, is alien invasion, which is probably not going to happen. But if I could make it happen, I would. It's like where I live now would be a perfect place for UFO flaps. So I would love for that to happen right now where I'm at in Florida. It would just be wonderful if it happened here, but probably won't. But you never know. It could. But as far as, you know, alien invasion and stuff, and then, of course, V for Victory, which I don't know if you recall that show, V with the reptilians and all that back in the 80s.
Yeah,
and all that.
Early 80s, yeah.
Yeah. Of course, they came
with – There was a reboot.
Yeah, they're actually.
That's right. Yeah, there was one. Yeah.
They're doing they're working on movies too now. So there's movies of that coming. Yeah. But that's the other whole, you know, situation with ufology, is these beings' interaction with us. Why are they here? What are they doing? You know, in an invasion, are they here for, you know, the good of us? There's some movie coming out, and it's John Goodman. And it's about alien invasion, but I forgot the name of it. But it's coming out soon, and it's about aliens come, and they make everything perfect. And I guess finally everybody gets sick of it being perfect, so they overthrow. But if you look up John Goodman at UFO or something, it'll pop up. It's, I forget the name of it, but it ain't out at theaters yet. But as far as the beings' interaction with us and stuff, I mean, do you ever think that beings could come down here to show us technology, or if they've tried to and our government's killed them? And what is your take on, like, an alien invasion, or why they would interact with us to begin with?
There's nothing on this planet they couldn't get anywhere else. If an alien species lived, say, 20 light years away, there's millions and millions of planetoids with natural resources on them. They wouldn't have to, there's nothing here they couldn't get anywhere much closer to where they lived. So it's nothing physical. I mean, interacting with us, I mean, it'd be like, we don't interact with ants. Usually we don't try to talk to bees. And my gut tells me they're that far advanced over us. We're still a shoot first society. We don't talk to each other. We talk at each other. We love our guns, and I'm all for gun ownership, but at the same time, we can't have cordial discussions with each other. We get angry. We call each other names. We conduct character assassination. So that is the hallmark of an aggressive, warlike species. If I was an alien, I wouldn't want to contact us, not at all, because all we do is kill each other. That doesn't mean they haven't. I mean, I have no idea how an alien would think. None of us do. So what are their motivations? I have no idea. As far as a material physical standpoint, I don't know why they would come here. Other than the possibility maybe that advanced life is not overly common in the universe. And we're relatively advanced. We've launched probes. We've gone to the moon. We have technology on some level. So maybe, and I'm just speculating, maybe the Earth and the fact that it has a relatively advanced society, or rudimentary advanced society compared to them, maybe that makes us interesting. Maybe that makes us worthwhile to study. But that's just pure speculation on my part.
Well, like you said, I agree that, you know, we're a warlike species, but one thing I know from growing up and seeing stress and, you know, how it affects family members from my dad who, you know, always worried about money, and then he passed away in my early 20s. But one of the things, that the factors that make us so crazy is just the way everything's set up, the system. I mean, as far as it's, we're just stressed, and when you're that stressed, you're crazy. It's like you can't even fart and you have to do a bill for it now, you know? There's like bills for everything. It's just that our system is completely just stress, and it's like it's designed that way. So the only way to overthrow that is going to be an alien invasion for them to give me my alien superhero suit, and I'm going to do it. That's right. That's my – I'm a writer too, fiction. So there you go. But – I mean, that's the whole thing, you know, we are like that, but it's because also, I mean, there's many reasons, but a big part of it is stress. I mean, it's just like everything, Bill, I mean, if you lose your job, you're dead. I mean, that's pretty much, that's how our system's built, and I don't think they're going to change it. I mean, maybe eventually they might on some level, but I think it's going to take alien invasion. That's how delusional I am. But as far as what are some of the – oh, have you ever seen Dan Aykroyd's UFOs Unplugged? That's one of my favorites, where David Sirita interviews him. That's on YouTube for free if you've never seen it. Have you ever seen
I've seen some interviews with Dan Aykroyd, yeah. He's fascinated with the UFO problem. He really is, yeah.
Did you see the documentary, though, where David Sirita interviews him and he's like chain smoking, talking about UFOs? That's pretty good. It's called Dan Aykroyd UFOs Unplugged. You can find it on YouTube. It's like.
No, I think I've probably seen excerpts from it, but not in its entirety. No, I haven't. No.
I own it. It's definitely one to watch for sure.
From the snippets I saw, you got the feeling that Aykroyd is passionate about it. He's driven. He has his positions about it. And that's interesting because he doesn't hide it. He's very vocal. He doesn't try to beat around the bush. He states what he feels, and that's it. I mean, it reminds me of there's been individuals throughout society, throughout history. Gerald MacArthur, former Senator Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter. There's been individuals of note that have made statements about the UFO phenomenon and have not. They have not backed down from those statements, which is interesting because these are people in positions of power, which means they have to mind what they say because they could lose that power. We all know that one false post or one false statement accredited to a politician and his career is done. Yet these individuals made grounded statements about the UFO issue, even some statements of personal experience with them. Because Reagan and Carter both had UFO sightings without fear of reprimand. I mean, Reagan and Carter both made their statements prior to being elected president. So it clearly didn't hurt their political careers. Barry Goldwater was all about releasing UFO information that the military may have. He had taken that stance since the 60s and still won re-election several times. And so these are all credible individuals that have made statements like that. So Aykroyd is another individual that's of note, not a political leader per se or military leader, but a celebrity, someone of note that could lose some career credibility talking about UFOs, but clearly doesn't really care about that. So that's interesting in today's society.
My only problem with him is the MUFON thing, which I lack the strength to get into all that, but that's my only problem that I foresee with Dan Aykroyd is the MUFON connection. Oh, there was someone on Facebook recently, I can't remember his name, but he was just posting all this vile, you know, political kind of racist kind of stuff. And I followed his name back and it was MUFON, state director. Like I see so many of that. That's my biggest problem with them is they need to cleanse house or something because just some real arseholes running that place like the KKK or something. But
you're speaking of John Vendry.
I know that story, but this was actually another dude, like a different one. I think it's the Virginia one, Virginia. But as far as that they need to clean house, and they're just not going to, and that's it. But that's my only problem. I love Dan Aykroyd, but I think he should drop them. Hey, did you get to see that Hunt for the Skinwalker documentary? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did view that. Yeah, I viewed it on a copy that a friend made for me. Yeah, I viewed it once.
That was a pretty big admittance. I enjoyed it, and I like with that guy. I know he did a Bob Lazar one and a Patient 17 or something, and I think that's it. But that the way they started that, I mean, they basically admitted that, you know, Bigelow bought it, and it was bought for the strict to study it for national defense. I mean, it was pretty good. I liked the book better, but I mean, the documentary wasn't bad, but it was definitely creepy. Like, at the end of it, they supposedly, you know, someone else bought Skinwalker Ranch, and he's like dressed up like, you know, a terrorist or something. They're interviewing him. that was kind of weird, but definitely an interesting documentary. Yeah, it was a little creepy. What did you think of it?
I don't like UFOtainment. I'm leery of documentaries like that because it's they're heavily promoted. And I have issues with I have issues when money is introduced to a large degree of the UFO phenomenon, the UFO community, because it's a slippery slope. Because, yes, it takes money to produce a documentary or a book or what have you, some product. That makes sense. And it makes sense to be able to make a profit off your endeavors because the bills don't pay themselves. I'm good with that. What the issue I have is, when someone's integrity starts to wander in the name of money, I've never been enamored with UFO documentaries, whether it's Skinwalker or the Bob Lazar one, or there's been a multitude of other ones, and ones that are just specific to the UFO issue. Just because it's very hard to make a documentary or a movie or present something in a video format that stays very objective. It's very difficult to do. And each documentary seems to have snippets of legitimate objective information, but it's hard to do that for the entire length of a film. It's very difficult. And that's just kind of how it is. I mean, this phenomenon is at times of such a high strangeness, to quote Dr. Hynek, it's very hard to stay objective. It's very hard to keep your own bias away from investigations. It's very hard to promote a book or a movie or a video or work without losing one's credibility. That's very difficult, without losing one's integrity. It can be done, but it's very difficult. And it pays to maintain your integrity, because we're all viewed as kooks by society. It was like, oh, he believes in UFOs, he must be a creep. Something's wrong with him. You get ridiculed. So if you conduct yourself with professionalism and you have high integrity, that doesn't happen. People can't call you out. But I watched the Skinwalker once, and just to see it, you know, to see what it was all about. But yeah, I try to stay away from documentaries. I kind of stay away from the internet too. But
That's probably a good idea. But
yeah.
But it that movie, I mean, I enjoyed it, but it made me feel like I was going to get kidnapped by my labs after watching it or something. Like, there's probably like encoded weird subconscious stuff in it or something. It was kind of creepy as far as that. But definitely I like to find – there was some movie I found with Eric Estrada. It's like – I like old – fiction alien stuff. I think it's called Starseed or something, but it's got the guy from Chips in it. Like, I love those old, you know, alien movies. Like, there's one that's James Earl Jones, and it's Betty and Barney Hill story, and it's black and white. I have that. I think it's the UFO incident. Yeah.
Yeah, it's back from 75, yeah, with Estelle Getty, yeah.
I like the movie perspective. I remember that movie. That's a good classic of, you know, we've had Fire of the Sky, Travis Walton, and all that stuff. Just, I like the movie perspective of it. And then of course the Christopher Walken Communion one. I love that. That's gold. Have you seen that one with Christopher Walken? That's really good.
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to the UFO incident with about the Betty Barney Hill, that was a well done TV movie. That was very well done.
Yeah. I remember that one. There's also a redo movie of a UFO alien vampires that Tracy Lords was in.
Is that the Tobe Hooper
movie? Well, there you have it.
Is that the Tobe Hooper movie's Life Force?
No, it's not Life Force, but it's very similar, yeah. It's quite a bit cheesier, though.
Okay.
Life Force was with, Steve Railsback back in the 80s? Yeah. But the vampires that came out of Halley's Comet? Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Here's something weird.
Yeah, it's also allegedly based on the top secret NASA Apollo 20 shot to the moon where they found a creature like that. But that's speculation.
Here's something for you I've been watching, and we only got about 5 minutes left, so my dog's trying to get up. You're going to have to wait, man, until the show's over, dude. But here's the thing. Oh, there's a show on Fox called The Passage that I've been watching, and I usually don't watch Fox for obvious reasons because Fox News makes me want to vomit and is connected to it. But the thing is, The Passage is based on these books by Justin Cronin, and Ridley Scott is involved, and you know, he did Gladiator and Legend and Alien and all that stuff. But the show is about the government finding some virus from the Mayans or Aztecs, I forget, and they actually start making, they use test subjects and turn them into vampires in the lab, and the vampires kind of start getting Nosferatu-ish. But it's pretty good. I like it. And there's a girl that they turn into one, and she's an agent and all kinds of government crazy, but it's pretty good. It's definitely weird. It's for sure. But the new thing is to tie vampires into aliens on some level. I know Timothy Beckley and Scott Corrales had some weird alien vampire book that came out, something about aliens being blood drinkers and over-dramatized, but it just would be fun to read, I'm sure. And it's got Scott Corrales got some pretty good stuff from South America and all that, too. He's been on the show. But the thing is, I know also in one of the Anne Rice books, which I love Anne Rice and all those vampire stories and stuff, but in one of those books, she ties back the vampires to a freaking ancient alien or something. So there's something, there may be a planet of Nosferatus. I think that's where I come from. But let me see. We got about 4 minutes. Well, I appreciate it so much, William. It's been a great show. I've had a long week. I'm recuperating. And it's been great having you on, though. What are some websites or anything you'd like to plug or anything?
Oh, I appreciate you guys having me on. I really enjoyed it. Well, you can find me on Facebook. My UFO group is interactive. It's called You For Real, A Historical Review. And I just launched a personal blog page on Facebook. It's been there about 2 weeks. It's named Cleverly William Pullen, where I vocalize my opinions and takes on the UFO issue and the issues contained within the UFO community. So my blog is entitled William Pullen. That's subjective. My group, You For Real, A Historical Review, is strictly objective. It's just an observation of the data and let people make up their own minds, poll questions, things like that. So that's where people can find me.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate it so much. And thanks. It's been great. We've enjoyed it.
You're very welcome, gentlemen. Thanks again. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Take care. All right, everybody. You're listening to United Public Radio, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. One thing I need to plug is this book two of David Moody's Hater Trilogy on sale. All Roads In Here by David Moody. That just came out recently, a few days ago. It's St. Martin's Press, David Moody's Hater Trilogy. Tomorrow, All Roads End Here. Coming up next is Wham. Next shows, February is Bridget Fonger, which is a superhero of love. It's a self-help love show about superheroes and relationships. We're going to hold hands. You should listen to it, Jay. Superhero of love. Superhero of love. March 1st, Jason Effett. That's going to be really good. Chasing American Monsters, Jason Effett. He was on a long time ago. He did a book, Backyard Paranormal or something like that, where he just interviewed people from his area and could show that you could find paranormal anywhere. And then March 8th, Carol Woodliffe. That's some shamanism. Jay will come back from Margaret Ann Limbo, The Crystals. David Moeller, that's a Kabbalah shamanism. Patrick Dunn is the Orphic hymns, which is basically incantations of summoning the gods from ancient Greece through the temples, translate it. That should be really good. Let me see what else. Heather Lynn, April 5th, Evil Archaeology. And then let me see. Anwen Avalon, that's water witchcraft, water elemental stuff. So that's it so far. I need to get my butt in gear. I'm scheduling for April, so trying to get some, you know, the usual eclectic guests from publishers, which a lot of those, Red Will Weiser, yeah, and Lillowen, and Inner Traditions. So, Llewellyn. Yeah, Lillowen. Llewellyn. Yeah, that's also a Welsh, like, or Celtic god, pretty much, that name. But let me see here, looking for JoJo Signals. It's five coming up next, Supernatural Substation. I hope everybody has a good weekend, and this is it until Joe pulls us. So Jay's going to sing while we wait for Joe to pull us.
I can't carry a tune in a bag, Jeffrey.
I have a new Star Trek. I have the new Star Trek Discovery episode. I got to watch that later. That's going to be good. Looking forward to it. Oh, I have a new Orville to watch too. But got some good guests coming up. I got to get in gear and start scheduling for April and beyond. You just have to write some publishers and stuff, but I usually schedule way ahead. So if you think of anybody, let me know.
Nick Redfern. We getting Nick Redfern again?
I'll have to see what he's got. I'll have to see what's coming out. Chances are he's got something coming out because he puts out books like Terminator. He's always coming up something. I've probably interviewed Nick Redfern about 10 times, written form. I've been in magazines interviewing him. New Dawn magazine. I have an interview in New Dawn, that Australian magazine, with Brad Steger. That's pretty awesome. Brad. But nonetheless, I'm still alive. 44, baby, representing 2019. Woo-wee! My dog is about to... He needs to go to the restroom. All right, Joe, you pulling us off? I got to take my dog to the pier. Where he pees on my bed. He's not. But... coming up next, Supernatural Substation, I presume. Oh, I know what else.
Yeah, that should be.
That Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio are doing a Devil in the White City show on Hulu. That's going to be good. I'm excited about that. Oh, man, about H.H. Holmes.
Okay, wow.
Yep. All right. Oh, I guess we'll just hang up because I don't know what's going on. I think Joe's just listening to us. See what we do. That's what he does.
He's waiting for us F-bomb on the radio. Shame on you, Joe.
Mischievous. I'm at the tail end here of this madness. I need to be put down.
What's this? I hear you're pregnant, man.
I am. I have an alien fetus.
I heard. I was kind of confused.
Mornings. You hit that snooze button at least 3 times. Then you rushed out the door with mismatched socks and an empty stomach. Sounds like someone needs to add some sizzle to their morning routine. Like a delicious breakfast sandwich from Mickey D's. Made fresh with hot and savory sausage. And now, get a sausage McGriddles, sausage McMuffin, or sausage biscuit for just $1 each. That's right. Get your morning sizzle back with 3 great breakfast sandwiches for $1 each only at McDonald's. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
The big wireless companies sold you an outdated plan tied to long-term contracts and mystery fees. Simple Mobile's different. You get a lightning-fast 4G LTE nationwide network with no contract, ever. And keep the phone and number you love. Just text the word BYOP to 611611 to see if your phone is compatible. Simple Mobile. Out with the old, in with the simple.
Standard text, message, and data rates may apply based on your mobile phone service. Please refer always to the privacy policy at simplemobile.com/privacy policy and the terms and conditions at simplemobile.com/terms and conditions.